The Monday Matters topic today is one which, sadly, in Donegal, over the years, we've had personal experience of, and there has been personal loss as a result of, and in many cases, I'm sure, people have been affected by this, but we don't see it. Online bullying, it's something that's been a facet of life here and elsewhere in recent years. And we have a number of experts that we're going to tease out this issue with over the next hour or so. I'm joined in studio by two special guests. I have Dominic McGlinchey, who's a youth worker with the Donegal Youth Service. Dominic, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And in studio as well, we have Barbara McCall, who's coordinator with Parent Hub in Donegal. Barbara, good morning.
Morning, Donal.
And joining us on the line, we have from the DCU campus, we have Professor James O'Higgins-Norman. He's the UNESCO Chair on Tackling Bullying in Schools and in Cyberspace. Professor O'Higgins-Norman, good morning.
Good morning to you.
Now, Barbara and Dominic, if you'd like both put on the headphones, you'll be able to hear what Professor O'Higgins actually is saying to us. Dominic, I want to start with you. As a youth worker with the Donegal Youth Service, obviously it's something that you're looking at a regular basis. How prevalent a problem is online bullying on the ground?
Well, I'd be going around national schools and secondary schools, and I'll be also having internet safety workshops with parents. And it ceases to amaze me, you know, the amount of difficulties that parents are experiencing on the ground. And when you go into the classroom settings, then young people are well aware of what, especially some of the gaming habits that we have going on now at the minute, they're bringing to their playgrounds. Fortnite will be a front runner when we're talking about gaming and national schools at the minute. And when you ask children, you know, does Fortnite make young people more aggressive, more violent? They'll agree that it does. And there's been research proving that at the minute as well, Donal.
Now, this at the moment, the big concern is Fortnite. There's also, I believe, a program called TikTok. Now, I don't know, is that a game or quite what TikTok is? I've only heard of that in the past couple of weeks. But there always appears to be a bet in war. It used to be GTA, and then for a while it was the war ones. Is it a matter of Fortnite in particular is a problem, or is it just Fortnite's replacing Grand Theft Auto or whatever the bet in war was at any given time over the past number of years?
Well, TikTok is an app where you can record videos and publish the videos for other people to view. I would be of the opinion that there's no one app any more dangerous than any other. There's no one game any more dangerous than any other. The danger from our perspective is where young people have access to strangers outside the family home would be a clinical danger. And then on the other side of the spectrum, man, these games are rated. There's a PEGI rating for the games, and there's ratings for the apps as well as to who should be using them. And the ratings are being totally ignored by the young people and by their parents.
Barbara, from the point of view of parents and, you know, as a representative of the Parent Hub, one of the things we're told constantly, and I've personally been in that situation, is that parents, quite frankly, do not have a clue what's going on in the bedrooms. And we don't know what games, we don't know what programs are being accessed. And our children know way, way more about this than we do as parents.
I think that's certainly the case. I think generally the kids are much more clued in on this stuff than we are as parents. And so there's a real responsibility on us to make sure that we know what's going on. Now, some of that is with younger children, that they shouldn't actually be online without supervision at all. You know, you could use the analogy of, would you send your 9-year-old to Belfast on their own? No, you wouldn't. And yet somehow you're letting them go online and not supervising that. And they're out in that milieu where, as you know, as they're meeting so many people online, there's the potential for so much harm. And yet we seem to be, as parents, quite naive about that. So there is something about making sure that we are informed, that we know that we're actually looking at the, whether it's the computers, the tablets, the phones that our kids are on, that we know what programs they're using, that we go online and make sure that we understand what that program is about or what that game is about. But there's also something about, you know, as you say, there's an issue with the age limits on these things and that they're being ignored. I think parents really need to have confidence in their own parenting and have the ability to say no. And if somebody is saying, oh, well, all my pals at school are playing it, that a parent's able to say, well, this is the age range on it, you're too young and you're not having it. So there is something about that kind of confident parenting that's needed as well.
I want to bring in Professor James O'Hagan-Norman. Professor, good morning to you.
How are you doing?
Very well indeed, thanks. I know your time is limited and we won't keep you too long. Professor, you're listening to what Dominic and Barbara are saying. You're hearing the perspective of the youth worker on the ground. You're hearing the perspective of a parent. I'm sure they're the perspectives you're hearing right across the country and further afield.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, parents are very concerned. Teachers are very concerned about online safety and cyberbullying of young people. But we have to kind of calm things down a little bit, I suppose, and just look at exactly what the research is telling us. Sometimes we can have the impression that the problem is really much bigger than it is. You know, the data shows that about 20% of kids are cyberbullied online, which means 80% aren't. So that's a really good thing. So we need to look at the 80% who aren't and see what's going on there to learn from that so that the 20% will then be able to become safer online. And Barbara's absolutely correct. The research shows that parents are over-relying on children self-reporting what's going on online rather than actually joining them online, supervising them online, and educating them about how to be safe online. Parents are using the online themselves, they're using the internet themselves. The old argument that there was a digital divide no longer stands up because the parents of this generation have all grown up with the internet and with gaming and with online apps and so on. So parents know how to use the internet, but they're not taking the time to spend with their children, understanding what is this week's game, what is this week's app, what is the thing that they're into this week, and assess the dangers, talking to other parents, and then agreeing on an approach to go forward. Our research would show that less than 20% of parents actively supervise their children's social media activity. So that's pretty serious. You know, as Barbara rightly illustrated for us there, it's like sending your child off to Belfast on their own, and let's see what happens. They'll let me know if there's a problem. The time has come now for parents to stand up and be confident and put in place old-fashioned parenting skills where you know where your kids are going online instead of offline, and you support them in being safe online.
It does seem to me the big difference now, my own children are both in their mid-20s, and it seems to me at this point the big difference between now versus when my children would have been 11, 12, 13, 14. The big difference now is back then the games they played on the computer almost were third-person games. They weren't interactive. Now it seems every game has got a huge interactive element to it, and it means communicating with people all across the world, whereas traditionally, for many people, a computer game is something you sit down and you play as a third person, and there's no interaction involved. That appears to be the big difference now.
So the thing there is that you don't have to play with somebody from the other side of the world. Parents can set limits to who you can play with online. You can establish communities of gaming, if you like, in which the young people are allowed to play. So, for example, I know with kids in my own family, we know everyone there that they play with online because we've vetted them and we've allowed them into the group. So the technology is there to do that. If parents are not doing that kind of thing, well, then they're taking a huge risk with the safety of their children. But in terms of that 20% who are cyberbullied or who have problems online, it's often in gaming rather than on social media apps where these problems occur. So they really need to pay close attention to what's going on and who young people are in touch with.
We know, and in this particular county, there was an issue with, I think it was Ask FM was the name of the particular site. That's going back some years.
Yeah.
But And this, I think, is a pressing question, because we're talking in one way about the fact that people are meeting strangers from all over the world. Is cyberbullying an issue with strangers, or is cyberbullying an issue with people you know?
The vast majority of the time, you will be cyberbullied by somebody you know, and the vast majority of the time, the bullying has occurred offline and makes its way online, or vice versa. The overlap between offline and online bullying is so strong now, we no longer even really talk about bullying being separated into those two environments, because usually it spills over from one into the other. There is obviously a risk from predators at home and around the world, but you're much more likely it's much more likely a child will be harassed or abused in some way by somebody in their own community, somebody that knows themselves, than it is somebody from abroad. That's not to say it doesn't happen, but the risks are much closer to home.
Is that your experience, Dominic, working on the ground?
That would be. It's not an internet problem, it's a behavioural problem. So it is, and you know, the perception in households that it is an internet problem. It's the same psychology, so it is. A young person bullying on the street is a young person bullying online. What I'm experiencing is we've got a generation of young people, and some of them are struggling to seek help. Like, if we put it into perspective, I was to ask all the listeners today, you know, when is it that you would go and get help? You know, what would you need to be experiencing in your life before you would go and get that help that you need? And we're asking young people who have less life experience to do that. And from Youth Work perspective, by the time I get working with a young person in our Teen Talk programme, maybe one-to-one, it's 6 or 7 or 8 months down the line. So they've already gone through the stress of not getting to sleep at night, the anxiety, the depressiveness, and now they're at a stage now where maybe they're borderline suicidal.
Yeah. I'd like to just say Dominic's absolutely right there. That 80% of kids who are not cyberbullied online, when we look at them and see what's going on with them, we find that they often have very good relationships with adults, people they can talk to, good relationships with friends. And so when there is a problem, they can turn around and talk about it pretty quickly before it becomes too hard for them to handle. So putting trusted adults and maintaining good, healthy relationships with peers is a really important part of developing resilience around online safety.
Barbara?
I think that's absolutely key. We run a lot of the Parents Plus parenting programs, and right from the early years program, children's program, adolescent program, the emphasis is on positive parenting, and it's about the quality of that relationship and the way that we are engaging with our kids and communicating and listening to our kids and really setting time aside to do those things. And if we build good foundations on that we have good communication from the beginning, it's much easier for kids to come and talk to us about these things. And there's a lot about nurturing that kind of emotional intelligence in kids, that they're able to talk about their feelings, that they're able to talk about when they're sad or when they're cross with somebody or if they're worried about something. So that as they become teenagers, when maybe communication is that bit more difficult and, you know, complex, that they can still come to us or come to some trusted adult and have that conversation. So a lot of the work that we do is about building that communication right from the beginning.
Professor James O'Higgins-Norman, I notice you're the UNESCO Chair on Tackling Bullying in Schools and Cyberspace. Is it deliberate that schools appears first in that description?
Well, yeah, I suppose it is. That's often the locus or the focus point of a lot of the most important relationships that young people have. So part of my role as UNESCO chair here at DCU is to work with schools in tackling bullying in young people's lives, be it face-to-face or online. So, for example, we have just launched a new program called FUSE, F-U-S-E. Sorry. And the FUSE program is available free of charge to all post-primary schools in Ireland, and it's research-based. We've been doing research for 20 years here that has shown us there are certain things that you can do to tackle bullying face-to-face and online, and a big part of that is working with partners like Barbara and Dominic there in the community to develop a whole community and a whole school approach. And the FUSE program, at the moment, schools are being invited to register onto that program, and it will help schools to step up what they're doing around bullying and online safety, and working in partnership with the parents, but actually putting the voice of the child at the centre of it all. And an awful lot of what we do as adults is talk about our concerns about these issues without listening to what the young people themselves are saying. And actually, when you do listen to them, they actually have the answers. So a big part of our FUSE programme in DCU is to give voice, give kind of a platform to the voice of young people and allow them to guide us how to help them around these issues. So hopefully a lot of schools and a lot of your listeners will sign up to the programme. They can go to antibullyingcentre.ie/FUSE, and that's where they'll be able to register for the programme.
And we'll put those details up on our own website as well. Professor James O'Higgins-Norman, I know you need to be elsewhere, so we'll let you go.
Thank you very much
indeed for speaking to us this
morning.
Thanks
a lot. Bye-bye.
Thank you. That's Professor James O'Higgins-Norman. They're the UNESCO Chair on Tackling Bullying in Schools and Cyberspace. It is the Monday Matters section. We're talking about online bullying. I'm joined in studio by Dominic McGlinchey, who's a youth worker with the Donegal Youth Service, and by Barbara McCahill, the coordinator with Parents Hub in Donegal. And before the break, we spoke to Professor James O'Higgins-Norman, who is the UNESCO Driscoll, Chair on Tackling Bullying in Schools and Cyberspace at DCU. Now, we've had a query from a caller, and it just simply says, my son is being bullied on Fortnite and is looking for some advice on how to deal with it. Dominic.
I would like to know what age the child is. You know, Fortnite to begin with is rated PEGI 12, which dictates that no child under the age of 12 should be playing the game in the first place. And God love the teachers in the county and probably across the country. You know, teachers, I know some teachers who have banned the word Fortnite from their classroom. That's the most topical word, and getting the children to actually focus on what they're supposed to be in the classroom is difficult for teachers. What should that parent do? Well, would you allow your child to stay outside in the playground and continue to be bullied? You know, remove them from that environment would be the first thing that I would be asking them to do. And let's see, can we get them on that game safely without the person who's bullying them gaming with them? You know, does that other gamer have to continue to game with them? Can they game in an alternative station?
And in terms of the school, I mean, they don't say if it's someone they know, someone in their own local community, and even someone in their own school, and that would be a factor potentially as well.
Likely it is someone that they know. You know, when they're people might not understand what happens in Fortnite. When you're playing Fortnite online, it's 99 other players and yourself that's playing, and most cases you could be playing with strangers, but when young people organise it before they leave school, okay, we'll all be on at a certain time, and they can be on together and possibly bully each other through the game, you know, excluding and isolating. There's loads of different ways that they can bully through Fortnite. Fortnite isn't solely the problem here. You know, Fortnite's the game that this bullying is taking place on. It could be any app, it could be any game that could facilitate that bullying. You know, so I don't want to be putting out the message that this game's a problem. You know, it's yeah. Goes back to the behaviour again. The behaviour is the problem in the first place. And, you know, should that parent be allowing the child to continue to play in that environment if they're being bullied?
And is the content of the game part of the issue, in as much as, you know, we hear sometimes that the game and what you do in the game prompts you to be perhaps a bit more aggressive, that if the game involves a lot of death and shooting and violence, then it perhaps makes your responses more violent, and then perhaps makes your responses more visceral and more bullying than they would be if you were... the game I play most often online is Scrabble. And that, I suspect, is a million miles away from Fortnite.
Well, research has concluded that Fortnite does make young people more aggressive, more violent. And I'm sure if there was research done on Scrabble, yeah. Donald, I would conclude that it gives people more maybe use of words, better grammar, better spelling. You know, we're all going to reap the benefits of what we sow. If we're going to spend time doing stuff and practicing stuff, well, we're going to become good at it, or we're going to improve at least.
Barbara, from the parental point of view, you've heard what Dominic has to say there. I'm sure you concur with a lot, if not all of it.
Absolutely. I think it is that question of how is the parent parenting in this situation. I'm not suggesting it's the parent's fault, but as parents, we need to look at what boundaries we are putting around the child. So as Dominic says, if the child is under 12, then there's a real issue as to why that child is even on that game. If they're over 12, I suppose the big thing is about communication. The fact that the mum is aware that the child is being bullied, that's good. Obviously, the child is making that known. But then the mum has to take action. And it may well be stepping back from that game for a period of time, trying to disconnect from that kind of theatre of bullying that's going on at the moment. And that could be met with a lot of resistance from the child. So, you know, that's going to have to be negotiated, but ultimately the parent has to parent and maybe, you know, maybe set down some fairly strong boundaries on that one. The other thing that I would suggest as well is, again, we're back to communication, the importance of children being able to come to a parent and say that they are being bullied. But also, even from a very young age, the ability of a child to be assertive, to be able to say, no, I don't like that, don't do it. And that's something that's really important for a small child to be able to do. And for a child to be able to feel that, even whether maybe it's at school, you know, it's unlikely that this bullying is only happening online. There may be some niggling going on at school as well. But to be able to go and say to maybe to a teacher that this is happening. I think that that capacity for communication is really important, and kids should be encouraged to be able to do that.
A comment we've just got, and this is an interesting one, and it's something you hear frequently. I think parents are too quick to jump in and take over a bullying issue. Sometimes leaving teenagers to sort out the issue themselves is best.
And that's where we want our kids to be able to be assertive, to have that sense of, nobody has the right to bully me, to push me around. And it's not that I then go and bully them instead, but I need to stand up for myself here and say, no, I don't like that. Stop doing that. And we do want our kids to develop that kind of capacity. But at the same time, it's getting that balance, and it's knowing, you know, how vulnerable our kids are, where this has taken them to, what's going on within their own head. So I think we have to be careful. Yes, we can't constantly jump in, particularly as our kids get older. They do have to be able to engage and deal with the world in a way that is strong and assertive themselves. But we do need to be there. They do need to feel that we have their backs, that we are supporting them, that they can communicate with us, that we're helping them to develop the skills that they need in order to be able to stand up and say, don't do this to me.
But the reality is, in most cases, in a case of bullying like this, it isn't a matter of two people with equal capacity squaring off against each other. This is one person who is clearly dominant over another person.
That's
and the other person does not have the capacity to deal with them. And
well,
that,
bullying,
in a
bullying,
sense, is what bullying is. Yeah,
it is a power issue. It is a power issue. So it's finding ways to empower our kids so that they don't always, you know, maybe they're not perceived as being the one who is vulnerable, who is the easy target. So we need to try to strengthen them. A lot of that is about their own awareness, their own communication, their own sense of themselves. So it's working on that. But yeah, ultimately, we are the parents, and we do need to have that protective eye on them as well.
Dominic?
Yeah, my heart goes out to teachers in this respect, because, you know, there's no school or no teacher in the country paying for Wi-Fi or paying for devices, and they end up bearing the brunt, because these bullying issues happen outside of school time. You know, nobody using social media apps in school. They might use Google and YouTube to educate, but they aren't using the apps or the games. And then they spill on the playgrounds, and the teacher and the principal of schools and the board of management of schools end up losing valuable time then dealing with these situations in the first place. And I think we've got to address the controllables. We cannot control another child in another home. We can control our own child. We can control what they're doing. We can control how they respond and react to these things. We can control what devices we give our children. And I'm gonna use a quote that a colleague of mine, Frankie McGreevy, uses very often. You know, the mobile phones that we give our children, they may be used for making phone calls, but there are many TV broadcasting devices. They can do hundreds and hundreds of things. And we're putting these devices into the hands of children. You know, I was talking to Barbara before we came on air, and she was telling me a story of a five-year-old in a junior room in national school getting bought an iPhone for their birthday. Like, that's not appropriate. Yeah. That child is now going around with the same power and ability that RTE have. If that child can upload a video, God knows what, and it's interesting enough or gruesome enough or funny enough, they could have more of an audience watching their video than RTE. And that child will not have any clue about the law. And to me, it seems like the parents don't have any idea of what the law is in relation to that. And I think it would be very important before we finish here today that we outline, you know, the community.
Absolutely. And we're going to get back to that. Yep. But I'm going to take a quick break. And after the break, we've been speaking a lot about theory. We've been speaking a lot about notions. We've been speaking a lot about ideas. We're going to hear a very real, a very personal and a very tragic story after the break. Now, as I said before the break, we're going to move away from the theory and the notional discussions and move into a story which is very real and very tragic. We're joined on the line by Jackie Fox, and you may recognise that name. Jackie's daughter, Nicole, died by suicide as a result of online bullying, and Jackie is now trying to get a new law called Coco's Law passed in order to help children in these situations. Jackie, good morning.
Good morning.
Jackie, I'm sure you've heard the tail end of some of the discussion there with Barbara and with Dominic, and I'm sure you hear these discussions. It must bring everything back to you.
Oh, everything, yeah. Nicole passed away on the 20th of January 18, but it's still so raw. You know, when I hear any of the stories or anything about suicide and bullying, it's everything is just so raw, and, you know, it's still very fresh in my head, you know.
In terms of your campaign to have a Coco's Law passed in Nicole's memory, what do you want that law to entail?
First of all, with the law, it's passed its first stage, a second stage, third stage, and it's now in its final stage. It's with the Garda commissioners at the moment, and they want to tighten it up and make sure there's no loopholes for when it comes to court. What I want in Coco's Law is to make online bullying a criminal offence. And I don't mean, the people say, define online bullying. I don't mean childish little things. Kids will say stuff online and they wouldn't mean it, or it'd be an impulse thing they'd say. But what I want is the likes of what Nicole was subjected to. Not only was she subjected to physical abuse, like putting cigarette butts out onto her, they burned her arm, they'd pulled her down flights of stairs by the hair, they'd give her elbows in the face and the chest. She actually dislocated her hip by the force of one of them knocking her into the corner of the table. Nicole took an overdose in 2015, where she just couldn't take the physical abuse, and she said to me, ma'am, the only reason why I'm here is because I don't want to leave you heartbroken. Nicole couldn't find a way out of the hurt that these people were causing. And then I thought, and Nicole thought, maybe, people found out about the overdose that she took, that, it would go away or ease down, or, some of them would back off. But no, it got a billion times worse and went on to the online. Every day, I know I heard you talking about kids, getting phones for the kids and what they should be allowed. When Nicole was 18, these people, every day, they told her to go die and hang yourself, slit your wrist, drink bleach. Everybody hates you, nobody wants you. And this was constant. Along with the physical abuse never stopped either. Nicole, then she only went out once a week on a weekend, and I begged her not to go out because of these people. She used to throw up before she'd go out. She was, her anxiety level was really high. But she said, "Ma'am, why should I have to stay in?" Now, I was always on standby when Nicole went out because she could ring me at 1 o'clock in the morning, "Ma'am, quick, come and get me," or 2 or 3. And then she would be physically abused, but when she'd come home, then the apps like Snapchat was so lethal to her, and Messenger and WhatsApp. WhatsApp was what they did. They all joined into a group, and Nicole wasn't invited into this group, obviously, but one of her friends was in the group, was connected with the group. But before she could tell Nicole what was on it, it was passed all around. It went to everyone, and everyone would start joining in, and fishes, malicious rumors about her, and just everything. And they did say that they made a fake page on Facebook as well, and they threatened to beat her up so bad that they were going to leave her on life support machine. And that's what did happen in the end. She was on life support machine. She also, when she said to me, "Ma'am," that she couldn't take it anymore, that, and the only reason that she wouldn't kill herself was because she didn't want to leave me heartbroken. Nicole was in her room. She cried every night going to bed. She cried getting up in the morning. She didn't want to get out of bed anymore. I didn't realise at the start that she was self-harming. She used to get her nails and dig so deep into the top of her legs and her stomach, and she just couldn't take it anymore. It got on top of her so much, until one day then, on the 18th of January 2018, myself and my 14-year-old son walked in to the hall. I had left the house at 3:20 and got home at 4:20. Myself and my son walked into the hall and found Nicole hanging from the banisters. She had used the stepladder and the dog lead. I was doing CPR on her. Yeah. She was still warm and she was still alive. I was begging her to hold on, and the ambulance crew came and we got her to the hospital. But by then, she had extensive brain damage, and yes, she was on life support machine. We had two, this is going to sound weird, but we had two of the most luckiest days in intensive care with her, because not a lot of people are lucky enough to be able to have 2 days to say goodbye to her. And that's what we were doing, saying goodbye, because with the brain damage, her organs were shutting down. And still, 3 days after Nicole passed away, she passed away on the 20th, 3 days later, or 2 days later, I can't remember, the main girl that started this bullying, put on Facebook, you know, if anyone is suffering from bullying or depression, there's always light at the end of the tunnel. Please don't hesitate to call me. And she was the one, her and another girl was the one that actually started the whole thing. And one of the girls moved to England and has admitted since then that they picked on Nicole and did everything to her through jealousy. And that's what it was, through jealousy.
It's a horrendous story, and our hearts obviously go out to you, Jackie, and to your family, and to all those who love Nicole, and there were many who did, and sadly perhaps that wasn't always evident. And the law that you want to see come in, I mean, inevitably people are going to be asking the question, why was that not stopped long before? If there were physical assaults such as cigarette butts being extinguished on her body, why were people not in court? Why were people indeed not facing potential prison sentences? Because that's assault, pure and simple. Grievous bodily harm.
The reason why was because Nicole had turned 18 and we went down to the guards and they said that I wanted to make the charges, but they said because Nicole was 18, she's an adult, and she would have to make the charges and say what happened. And Nicole said, "Ma'am, I can't make the charges because not only is everything happening to her, she would have been known as a rat as well, do you know? And that would have even made it, I know it sounds probably silly, but that would have made it a billion times worse. And do you know what, Donald? I'm glad she didn't make the charges because... When after Nicole passed away, the guards came to me and said that, she was scared to make the physical abuse, but the online charges, the guards said that it wasn't an offence to bully or cause harm, whether it's through suicide or self-harm, and it wasn't an offence for people to do that, and it's still not an offence. I could go onto anyone's page and annihilate them until they couldn't take it anymore, and it's still not an offence until Coco's laws brought in, where I know there is a few laws, a good few laws going to be in Coco's law, but one of the online one will definitely be where it'll be a criminal offence and you can go to court, where guards had their hands were tied before that.
Jackie, we wish you well, and obviously we hope that this does come to fruition, and that this law coming into fruition will give you some comfort and give the family some comfort as well. And you'll know that at least Nicole's memory will live on in that law, and that some contribution will be made to make sure that nobody else goes through what she and what you went through.
It's a cold comfort for me. Obviously, I want the law to be out and to help other people, but it's not going to change my situation. But for the law to be called Coco's Law, it is her legacy. It's the least. It's the only thing that can be done for her now. It's not going to bring her back, but she will help. She will help thousands of people.
Jackie Fox, thanks so much for sharing your story with us. Before we let you go, Dominic, you just wanted to make a comment there.
Ms. Fox, I just commend your bravery and your own resilience, and keep going, because you are going to impact positively some child in the future. And just to give you some energy back, you know, there are people on the ground right across the country, and even our teachers. Our teachers have been in so many classrooms, and you can see the warmth and the kindness, and let's hope that we can grow that, you know, and what you're doing is only going to enable that to grow.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
And Jackie, thank you indeed for speaking with us this morning. That's Jackie's story there, and that just gives us a context to this particular discussion. We're going to take a very short break. After this, we're back and we'll be speaking to a member of the Parents Association of one of the biggest schools in Donegal. It's the 9 till noon show. Donal Kavanagh standing in for Greg. We're into the final 10 minutes of the programme. I want to go to Sinead Smith, who's a member of a Parents Association in a secondary school in Donegal. Sinead, good morning to you.
Good morning, Donal. How are you?
Very well indeed. Thanks. Sinead, you've been listening to the discussion. What's your take on this particular issue from the point of view of someone who's in a school?
My heart goes out to that lady who lost her daughter, Nicole, and it just really does show how vulnerable our children are online. I was talking to a researcher there and we were talking about screen time and you know, the screens that we allow our children to use can access our children at any point if they're online. And they are targets for all sorts of imagery, for market consumerism, for there's huge aspects to what we're allowing. You know, it may seem quite innocent, allowing your kid to spend 10 minutes on the phone playing a wee game to keep them busy while you're doing something else. But while they're on that phone and they're connected to the internet, they are accessible by the internet for, you know, advertising. And we had a situation in my own family where one of our young people, one of our kids was targeted by pornography sites and we weren't aware of it. You know, so there's huge implications that people, parents, need to be aware of, and you can't just pretend that they're not being targeted, because they are.
And you would concur then with what Barbara was saying, that there is an element of parental responsibility here in terms of knowing what the young people are doing and knowing what sites and what games they're accessing?
Absolutely, because if it's not the parents' responsibility, I mean, a child is a child will be inquisitive. It's their nature. They'll also have a tendency towards doing or playing games that give them some sort of thrill, or, you know. So, that you can't expect, if you gave a child 10 packs of Haribo, you'd be very lucky to leave the room and come back and there'd be anything left.
Yeah.
They can't monitor themselves, you know. So you need to curb that as a parent yourself. You need to be aware, and they need to be taught self-discipline on screens, and while they're on the internet, they need to be taught healthy habits around the use of these devices, you know.
There was a time back in the day when the television was regarded as the babysitter for the child. Of course, the difference now is it's not just a television where the watching is going one way. It's now very much going two ways, and we're into a whole different ballgame in terms of the potential of the internet for good and for bad.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, my youngest is 8 years old, and I sat down this morning and thought about how much access he has to a screen of any kind, you know. I broke it down to even if he's sitting in the car and we're waiting for his sister to be collected from school, and he's like, oh, can I play that wee bus driving game for 10 minutes while we're waiting? And you kind of go, oh, yeah, okay, he is 8 and he plays 30 minutes of a PlayStation or Minecraft, and then he might play be on an iPad for 20 minutes looking up stuff, usually about cars or the weather or different parts of the world and stuff like that. And then he's got 20 minutes in the evening before bed of TV, you know, a couple of episodes of a cartoon.
But the key is, you know where he's at and you know what he's on.
I am sitting with him. I am beside him. I never leave it with him.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, you know, all this online stuff and access to technology is a good thing. And our kids have got to be technology savvy. There's no point trying to, you know, we're not going to go and live in a cave and pretend this stuff doesn't exist. It's how we use it. And you're absolutely right. And something that we would think is very important and that we would look at in a lot of our parenting programs is developing a family media plan.
Yes.
What's allowed? Yes. When is it allowed? What is absolutely not allowed? You know, and even things like at the table, that nobody brings their phone to the table. The idea that, phones get left in the kitchen at, you know, whatever, whenever you're going to bed, that kids are not bringing phones upstairs with them. Big part of that as well is there's no point us saying it and then we as parents do something else. So we role model as well. And that's absolutely vital that we get that right as well. There's no point telling our kids they can only have 20 minutes and then they can't get our attention because we're too busy on Facebook or something to talk to them. So we have to model how we want them to be. But I think
I'm just thinking of, you know, a lot of parents use it as a treat. If you behave well, you'll get this. It's not a treat. It's a way of life that they're when they grow up, that's the world that they're going to be confronted with, that technology is everywhere. It's a tool and it's a skill that they need to learn. It should never be rewarded as a treat for, you know, being quiet or behaving yourself or, you know, sitting still or, you know.
Sinead, that's a really, really good perspective and thanks very much indeed. We're literally into the last minute. I know, Dominic, you wanted to jump in there and you wanted to just give us an outline very quickly about the law and the legal situation too.
Most parents aren't aware that, you know, criminal responsibility in Ireland starts at 12 years of age and in Northern Ireland is actually 10 years of age. And we do have a Communications Regulation Act which says it's an offence to send by telephone any message that's grossly offensive, indecent, obscene or menacing. And it's also an offence to send by telephone any message for the purpose of causing annoyance, inconvenience, needless anxiety to another person. You know, we need to understand that our young people are going to be sending messages to bully other people. You know, they're going to be breaking this law and they're actually going to be sending the evidence. The evidence is going to be part of that message. Very, very concerningly is the use of these devices to take photographs. Donegal Youth Service has been in every secondary school in the county at this stage and more than 60% of the national schools. And we're still hearing stories of young people taking photographs, you know, be it in the changing room where somebody goes over and whips somebody's shorts down and somebody's at the far side of the room taking the photograph, to an extreme, going into a toilet, stand up in the cubicle and putting the phone over the cubicle and videoing another person using the toilet. And we have to understand the consequences of these cases ever go to court and have a conviction. We'll have a 12-year-old, maybe by then they'll be 13, 14, convicted of an offence that could lead to their name being added to the sex offenders register, which in turn will rule them out of working with young people, adults, vulnerable people. They will not get a visa to go to countries like America or Australia or any country that requires a visa for that matter. Basically, this could change the outcome of a young person's life. And I think it's really, really important that parents take up the responsibility. You know, don't be giving that child a phone freely available. And, you know, even does a young person, 8, 9, 10, 11, need to own a device? Could the house not own a device and take control of it?
Dominic, thank you very much indeed. Barbara, you have 10 seconds, literally. We're a minute over already.
Parent Hub have lots of parenting programmes coming up around the county. We're going to get Highland to put the link up online so you can register online. Parents need to create a bit of space for themselves to think about their parenting, to think about, you know, to just build their own skills and their own confidence to be able to parent in a strong and assertive and nurturing way. And that is a protective factor for our kids.
Barbara, Dominic, Sinead, thank you all very much indeed. Thanks to Caroline Orr and to Yvonne McFadden for production, research and support. Thank you for listening. Thanks to all our contributors. Good day.